Okay, I want you to try something with me, just for a second. Try to focus. I mean, really focus on something hard.
Okay, I'm doing it.
Now, hold that thought and tell me, what just happened to your face?
My face? Oh,
yeah.
The eyebrows.
The eyebrows, they jam together, right? Your jaw tightens, you get that scrunched up, I am thinking very hard look.
Oh, absolutely. The classic focus face. It's almost like an instinct, isn't it? We feel like we have to frown to lock it in.
Exactly. And that right there is the whole problem. We treat our attention like it's some kind of wrestling match.
Mm-hmm.
Like if we just grab our brain by the collar and, you know, shake it hard enough, it'll finally behave. But for most of us, the reality inside our heads is, well, it's more like a committee meeting that just never, ever adjourns.
And every single person on that committee has a megaphone and a completely different agenda.
Yes. And if that sounds familiar to you, if your mind feels like that chaotic negotiation, then you are going to want to stick around for this deep dive. Because today, we are unpacking a totally different way to think about focus. It's not about force. It's not about gritting your teeth.
It's about something the RAFT to Freedom program calls a unified mind.
It's a really different way of looking at it.
It is. We're diving back into the RAFT program today, and we're looking specifically at Chapter 49, which is titled A Unified Mind as a Support.
And for anyone new to this, let's quickly set the stage. The program is called RAFT, and it's pronounced just like the word raft.
Right. It's an acronym. RAFT. It stands for Recognize, Abandon, Freedom, and Train. It's a whole roadmap, really. And today, we are deep into the freedom part of that journey.
So our mission for this deep dive is to figure out why this idea of collectedness, which sounds so gentle, is actually way more powerful than just raw force. We're going to talk about how to stabilize what they call the inner deck of your mind.
And maybe stop some of those energy leaks that come from trying to do a million things at once.
Okay, sounds like a plan. But I have to play devil's advocate for a minute. We live in this world that just rewards effort, right? So if I'm not frowning and straining, am I really even trying?
Well, the text situates us in a place it calls the land of perpetual dawn.
I like that.
It's a metaphor for clarity.
Mm.
The fog is lifting. The struggle is starting to subside. And this unified mind concept is the sixth of the seven supports that help you navigate that land.
And the chapter really goes after that focus face idea we started with. It says, true concentration is the total opposite of bullying your mind into submission.
It does. It brings in this great quote from Alexander Graham Bell. He said, the sun's rays do not burn until brought to a focus.
Hmm.
And if you think about that, the sun doesn't strain to create heat. It doesn't grit its teeth or anything. It just converges.
Okay, so it's a natural result of alignment, not effort.
Exactly. In the RFT program, this is called collectedness. It's not about tightening the screws. It's about the inner weather just settling down. The mind naturally comes to rest in one place.
Inner weather, that's a much better image than a wrestling match. But is this just like one state of mind or does it change?
And that's where the chapter gets really useful. It actually breaks it down into three distinct types of collectedness, depending on where you are in the whole RFT process.
Okay, walk us through those. Because I imagine what you need in a crisis is different from what you need when you're just, you know, trying to work.
Precisely. So first you have what they call a gathered mind. This is from the earlier abandoning stage of the program. It's tactical. Think of it like you're on a raft and a sudden cross current hits.
Like a strong urge or a spike of anger.
Yeah. You grip the oar tighter. You gather your attention to hold your ground so you don't get swept away. It's collectedness as a form of protection.
So that's where a little bit of firmness does come in.
A little bit, yes. But the second type is where we are today.
Yeah.
The unified mind. This is the freedom stage. The friction is dropped. The raft is just running true because you're not fighting the currents anymore. It's about stability.
And the third one.
That comes later in the training stage. It's called appropriate collectedness, which is all about taking that stability out into the world and navigating complex ethical situations. But for today, we're really focused on that middle one, on stability.
You know, there's an analogy in the text that I thought was just incredibly helpful for this. The telescope on the boat. Can you unpack that one?
Oh, this is the core image of the chapter, I think. Imagine your wisdom, your ability to see things clearly, is a really high-powered telescope, and it's mounted on the deck of a boat.
Okay, got it.
And the safe shore you're trying to spot is, you know, your goal, freedom from old habits. But if the deck of that boat, your mind and body, is rocking violently with agitation or craving, what do you see through that telescope?
Nothing. A complete blur.
Exactly. And here's the key point. It doesn't matter how powerful the telescope is. It doesn't matter how smart you are. If the platform is unstable, the tool is basically useless.
So a unified mind isn't about getting a better telescope.
No, it's about stabilizing the deck. When the body gets quiet and the mind stops lurching at every little wave, clarity is just the natural result. You don't force the focus, you just stop shaking the boat.
That completely flips things on their head, doesn't it? Because normally when we feel scattered, the impulse is to try to look harder.
It's to squint and strain.
Yeah. But this is saying, no, no, stop touching the telescope. Just calm the boat.
It's a huge shift from active doing to a state of settling.
Which leads us right into this idea of fragmentation versus wholeheartedness. We mentioned the committee meeting earlier.
That inner argument that just drains all your energy.
And the RAFT program really describes that state where the mind is just split. You know, part of you wants to scroll on your phone, but another part knows you should be working.
And part is replaying an argument from yesterday, and another part is dreading a meeting tomorrow.
And that split is just, it's exhausting. The chapter defines that fragmentation as the nagging voice that's always saying, I should be doing something else.
Versus unification, which is simply, I'm here, this is what I'm doing now.
It sounds so simple, almost like a platitude.
It does. But think about how rarely we actually experience that. The text brings in the philosopher Søren Kierkegaard, who said, purity of heart is to will one thing.
I've got to admit, when I hear a phrase like purity of heart, it feels a little heavy, a bit judgmental, like I need to be a saint to focus.
Right. It sounds like a moral demand you're definitely failing at.
Exactly.
But the way the RAFT program frames it is so different. It's not a moral demand. It's a description of relief. Think how tiring that inner negotiation is. When you finally will one thing, the civil war in your head just stops.
So the purity isn't about being good, it's just about being uncluttered.
Precisely. The authors make a great point that the strength of a raft isn't about how big the logs are. It's about how tightly they're bound together. That's unification.
Let's talk about the science for a second, because the program brings up something called switching costs. I think I know what that is, just from my own day, but what's actually going on?
This is straight up psychology. The research is pretty clear that every time you scatter your attention, like checking an email while you're talking to someone, you pay a tax.
An energy tax.
A literal energy tax, yeah.
Yeah.
Your brain has to dump the current context, load the new one, deal with that little task, and then try to reload the original context. It burns glucose. It fatigues your neural circuits.
So when I feel completely wiped out at the end of a day where I feel like I did nothing, it's because I've been paying that tax constantly.
That's very likely it. And the chapter also mentions flow states. When you're in a state of deep absorption, the brain actually quiets down the prefrontal cortex, the part that does all the self-monitoring.
The nagging part.
The nagging part, yeah. There's just less me narrating the whole experience. The brain shifts into these alpha or theta waves, which are linked to relaxed, sustained attention.
Okay, so we get the what, it's stability, coherence, and we get the why. It's more efficient, it gives us clarity, but the how is always the tricky part. If I can't force this, what do I actually do?
The chapter breaks this down really practically into practice on the cushion, so formal meditation, and off the cushion, just in daily life.
Let's start with on the cushion, and I noticed the first step is not clear your mind.
No, absolutely not. That would be forcing the telescope again. Step one is settle the body first.
I think the line in the text was, you can't aim a shaky weapon.
That's the one. Attention needs a calm place to land. So before you even think about your breath, you soften your eyes, you unclench your jaw, you drop your shoulders, you just let the whole system physically downshift.
Okay, so the body's settled. Step two.
Choose a home base.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's usually the breath. But the distinction they make is really important. It's not a tunnel you have to stare down. It's just an anchor, a place to return to.
Now, step three is where I think most of us really get it wrong. We think meditation is supposed to be this, you know, dry, disciplined thing. But the text says there's a secret ingredient.
Pleasure.
Right. Explain that, because pleasure and discipline, they don't usually hang out in the same sentence for me.
Well, think about it behaviorally. It's really hard to force your mind to pay attention to something that's boring or unpleasant. It just wants to escape. But if you can find a quality in the breath that actually feels good, maybe soothing or calming, then that pleasure acts like glue.
So you're not forcing the mind to stay. The mind wants to stay because it's pleasant.
Exactly. The chapter quotes Rick Hansen, who says, the mind becomes steady when it is interested, not when it is bullied. It's like you're not chaining the dog to the porch. You're giving it a nice juicy bone so it wants to stay there.
That is a huge reframe. But let's be real. The mind is going to wander. Mind lasts, what, 4 seconds before it's off planning dinner?
And that's step four, the gentle return. The RAFT program brings in St. Francis de Sales here, who basically says that even if you spend a whole hour doing nothing but patiently bringing your heart back over and over again, the time is well spent.
That's so forgiving. It means the failure to stay focused is actually just part of the exercise.
It is the exercise. The return is the bicep curl of meditation. Now, if your mind is just really, really slippery, step five is what they call the training wheel.
Counting the breaths?
Just counting from 1 to 10. You get distracted, you just gently go back to 1. It gives the mind a simple thread to follow until it starts to settle.
Okay, so that's the formal practice. But what about the rest of our lives? You know, the traffic, the deadlines. How do you bring a unified mind to a chaotic office?
And that's the off-the-cushion practice. The first and maybe biggest point is just to accept that multitasking is a myth. It's really just rapid-fire switching, and like we said, it's draining your battery.
So, single-tasking.
Single-tasking is a form of relief.
Yeah.
When you wash the dishes, just wash the dishes. When you talk to your friend, just talk to your friend. Try to drop that second mental track that's always planning the next thing.
That sounds lovely, but what about when things get really intense? The chapter has this specific tool for high-pressure moments, the steadiness check.
I love this one. It's so practical. Before you hit send on that angry email, or before you walk into a difficult conversation, you just pause for 60 to 120 seconds.
That feels like an eternity when you're all fired up.
It does. But in that pause, you ask yourself one simple question. Is my mind reactive right now? And if the answer is yes, you wait. You don't act from that place. Decisions made from a steady platform are just so much clearer and kinder.
The chapter also has this little prescription list, right? Matching the remedy to the state of mind.
The right medicine, yeah. So if you're agitated and revved up, you lean into deep calm. If you're feeling sluggish and zoned out, you lean into enthusiasm or inquiry. And if you're just scattered all over the place, you just pause.
It's like mental triage.
That's a perfect way to put it. It's about responding skillfully to what's actually here instead of just reacting out of old habits.
Before we wrap up, I want to touch on the historical roots of this. The RAFT program is secular, but it obviously draws from Buddhist psychology. How does this chapter connect back?
Well, the text refers to the teachings of Gautama, the Buddha. And then after that, just Gautama. It specifically brings up the Samadhi Sutta.
And samadhi is the word for concentration, right?
It is. But the key teaching is that concentration isn't the end goal in itself. It's the platform. You develop concentration so that you can understand things as they really are. You can't have insight if the platform is constantly shaking.
There was another one mentioned too, the Anapanasati Sutta. That sequence seemed really important.
It's fascinating that the sequence it describes is joy, then tranquility, and then concentration.
So joy comes before concentration.
That's the sequence. You don't concentrate in order to get happy. You find a way to gladden the mind, which calms the body. And that calm is what allows concentration to arise naturally.
Which goes right back to that glue of pleasure idea. We have the order of operations totally backward. We try to force ourselves to focus so we can feel better. But this is saying we need to feel a little bit better first in order to focus.
Changes your entire relationship to the practice. It stops being a chore and starts being a place of refuge.
So let's bring it all home. If there's one thing you want the listener to take away from our deep dive into chapter 49, what is it?
I think it's that a unified mind is about coherence, not control. It's the difference between white-knuckling the steering wheel of a car that's out of alignment versus just letting the car track straight because the wheels are already aligned.
It's just less friction.
So much less friction, less inner argument. It's the shift from I should be doing something else to simply I am here.
And if you want to explore this map for yourself, the material we've been working from is the RAFT to Freedom workbook. It's written by Dr. Catherine Jacob and Vince Cullen.
And what's really amazing is that they are making the entire 66-chapter program available completely free online. It's an incredible resource. You can find it at raft2freedom.org.
That's raft, the number 2, freedom.org. Definitely worth checking out.
And before we sign off, there's a self-reflection question at the end of this chapter that I think is really worth sitting with for a moment.
Let's hear it.
It asks, when I stop and sit quietly, does it feel more like coming home or like something in me wants to escape?
Wow, that really hits home. It's a powerful question about whether we've actually built that safe place inside ourselves yet.
It is. And to close it out, I'll just share the quote from Seneca that ends the chapter.
Please do.
To be everywhere at once is to be nowhere at all.
Thanks for diving in with us today. We'll see you in the next one.
Bye-bye.